What is up, Slash and Survivor Girls? I miss saying that. Welcome to another brand new edition of the Creepin' It Real Horror Cast. I am Mistress Meg.
I am the Good Buddy Lunchbox.
And we are biggity-biggity back.
Whoop-whoop-whoop-whoop. Oh my god, like this is a lot of fun. Like, I'm really excited that we're back in the saddle again.
It's gonna be pretty fucking super.
I'm sorry, like, as I said it, I heard the song, the bah! Like, the scream.
Aerosmith?
In the saddle again. I'm back! Sorry, like, it's like, as I said it, it's like, that's all I got.
Yeah. So, if you've been wondering where we've been the last 6 months, it's my fault. 100%. Yeah. It's all my fault. So, back in October, we had released the first episode of our Dumpster Fire Month when we did Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. My grandfather died on Halloween last year.
And I also have to say, what a great man. Like, so very, very, very sad.
And I didn't think it was going to hit me as hard as it did, except it clobbered me. And I needed several weeks to sort of get my bearings again. And although Craig was trying to push me to continue the show, I just couldn't seem to want to prioritize it with the death in the family and everything that was going on behind the scenes in my personal life. I just could not bring myself to find the ambition to do the show. At one point, we even discussed ending it for good. However, in the last several weeks, we had been talking about it. We'd been seeing some of the newer movies coming out. I finally got around to seeing Halloween Kills like a month ago and was kind of thinking, I really would like to do an episode on this. Yeah. So,
well, even when I saw it, because, I mean, we all know my standpoint on Halloween, where I was just like, oh my god, it's like, yeah, but Halloween Kills came out, and I was like, I was in so hard, and yeah. I was like, and it was so weird to say, where I'm like, this is Halloween, and I'm excited. And I'm
yeah.
So I was like, we need, and I mentioned it to you, I was like, I think we might need to do a show on this.
Yeah, so I messed up the time frame. I wanted to see it. When I saw it, it was back in March. So this is dropping in July. So it's been a few months since we watched it, but that was sort of the germ of, do I really want to do this again? Fast forward a little bit, and I decided, yes, I would like to do this again. I think it would be a ton of fun to pick up where we left off with a few tweaks and changes.
And I left the channel, like, I left all the streaming completely active, so if anybody wanted to go through and listen to anything from our catalog, it was up and ready to go, and I just kind of just left it. I kind of felt, in a weird way, naked, because, you know, I handle pretty much the entire Instagram, like, so all the stuff that you see posted, that's me. Like, so, I mean, you'll post some stuff here and there, but most of the time, it's like, it's there, but it's like me not posting at all, or, you know, doing schedules. It just kind of felt eh. But I got kind of curious the other day, and I pulled up our channel, like, I pulled up our stats. The last time I think we crossed, was it the 4,000 mark? I think it was the last time that we mentioned.
It was 7,000.
Okay, yeah, so it was like 7,000. So within that short time frame, we crossed over the 8,000 mark, and this is without putting out any shows. So this is just you guys just all listening to our back catalog, and for some reason, the Dumpster Fire episode for Freddy's Dead is like our sixth highest show. It's like reached like at 115 plays or something like that. In that short amount of time, I'm like, holy shit. I was like, that's pretty
epic.
Yeah,
our top performing one is still Dawn of the Dead, though.
Dawn of
right?
the Dead, and then I think our Shining episode is also.
That's mostly because people just want to hear us fight.
It's, what's the vampire movie?
Fright Night?
No, not Fright Night. That one's still pretty low. It's the, oh my god, my brain just completely shut off.
What else is new? Is it ever on?
No, not at all. No, it's the
Salem's Lot.
That one, ding, 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 get her a prize. But yeah, Salem's Lot is also one of our highest too. which is interesting. Like, I don't see that, one being...
I don't know if it's just because it's over 3 years old, so it's had some time to rack up some plays, but also it's just an odd one, because that's sort of a weirdo Stephen King one, but I'll take it.
I like it. But still, thank you guys so, so much for, you know, just sticking with us.
And for those who, we have had a handful of regular listeners who have reached out to see what's been going on, how we've been doing, why haven't we been putting out shows, well... this is for you guys, so thank you so much for your support and all of the craziness that has been all me. It's been 100% me in my personal life. But I miss doing the show. It was a lot of fun. And we're going to pick this bad boy back up, and we're going to keep it on Tuesdays. Except instead of doing the theme months that we've been doing... we're going to hunker down and dive into full series now for a while.
And I kind of like it, that idea, too, just because from if you go back and listen to our, well, the Shining retrospective, where you got the three, you know, different Shinings. And then also...
oh, the Shining Three-Ways?
The Shining Three-Way. Mm. And then you got the Halloween saga review, where we went through the entire goddamn thing. I was like, I like... doing that. So I like being able to dive into the movie a little bit more, but I like having it where we could just kind of go through and just knock each one of them out.
And the other, that's one of the reasons why, and then the other reason why is in the off chance that there's another speed bump or something happens to either one of us life-wise and we have to stop the show again, I would like to... I would feel more satisfied and more the completionist in me would feel a lot better if we were actually nailing down some of these series and completing them all the way through, even maybe doing rankings and those sorts of things. So
now I am going to put in a request because my birthday is this month and I feel like a shitty lunchbox if I didn't give the listeners what I have been chirping on ever since...
for 3 years?
For 3 years. For my birthday. I know, like, we're going to be doing the Nightmare... like, we're going to do the whole series.
Yes, we're going to have a brief commercial break in between, though.
I want to do Jaws the Revenge. I want to do
for your birthday?
For my birthday.
Are you nuts?
Well, because when we first started the show, and it hit my birthday, we did... the first, my favorite movie of Jaws. And I want to, some, and we've done Jaws 2, and Jaws 3 will be in there somewhere. We'll kind of use that as like a filler for, you know, in between shows or series. Stuff like that. But it's like, for, I was like, because we didn't get, like, I felt like that was going to be the crescendo of the dumpster fire where I just go whole ham and just. Cutting promos left and right.
I almost feel like I could sit that episode out and just let that be like a 45-minute rant for you. And I'll just sit here and like wave at you if you're talking in circles. But I feel like I'm not going to contribute a whole lot to that episode because you hate it so much.
No, but I feel like that needs to happen. Like, so
I that's fine. I can put off Seed of, and I can put off Seed of Chucky as long as possible.
No, and that was the thing. Like, when we first got, like, trying to get the idea going to get recordings up and all that stuff, I was like, okay, well, we need to just, I think we need to just go back into dumpster fire and just kind of continue on with how we did it. And it's like, none of us wanted to do Seed of Chucky. We were like, oh, like, my Xbox didn't even want to play it. Like, I would put the disc in. And yeah, I still use a disc because it's not streaming anywhere. But it's like, I put the disc in, and it's like, my Xbox is like, nope, sorry, son. Ain't happening. Ain't gonna.
I'm going to save you from yourself, and you are not watching this movie.
I am not swinging that way. The play button is not going on.
And I went, and I did a full Roku search, and I had to rent it for at least $4. And I'm like, this movie's not worth $4, so we're not watching it. So instead... upon making the decision to just start completing the series as we go, we're going to open at the close, and just as we started out this show in the beginning, we're going to go ahead and since we're going to reboot? Requel? Are we rebooting or requeling?
No, it wouldn't be a reboot.
So, what would you call this iteration? Are we reboot? Requel? Readapt? restart?
I would say it's a second win. Like, this is just a pickup and pick up where you left off type of thing.
Oh, like in a race where we kind of had to catch our breath a little bit?
Yeah, like me when I run and I fall down and I do fat guy stand, I have to like, oh my god, I can't get up. And then like, boom, and then my fat power just kind of just, and I just take off again. That's kind of how I see
it. So are we kicking into fat gear?
It's power.
Okay.
It's not fat, it's power.
Sure. We'll go with that. Right. So, yeah.
Do you know that reference?
I don't.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you later. Let's get into this episode. Okay. You got your perts?
I do.
This is the perts of the
the nerdy details. Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors was released on February 27th, 1987. It was made for a budget of about $4.5 million. It ended up grossing just under $45 million worldwide. The movie starred the returning Heather Langenkamp as Nancy, Robert Englund as Freddy, Craig Wasson as Neil Gordon, the debut of Patricia Arquette as Kristen Parker, Ken Sagos as Kincaid, Rodney Eastman as Joey, Jennifer Rubin as Taryn, Bradley Gregg as Philip, Ira Hayden as Will, and Cowboy Curtis himself.
You don't know how much I love Lawrence Fishburne. And like whenever he pops up, I go...
He was Larry.
He was Larry in this. But no, that was the thing, is like every time I see him in any movie, automatically Cowboy Curtis like pops, like just anytime.
And Cowboy Curtis played Max. There was also Penelope Sudro as Jennifer. John Saxon returned as Lieutenant Thompson. Priscilla Pointer was Elizabeth Sims, and then we had a bunch of small bit parts after that. It was directed by Chuck Russell, and it was written by a whole heap of people. The original skeleton of the story was done by Wes Craven, and then it was also finished by Frank Darabont and Chuck Russell.
Pretty much like Wes Craven just going, okay, it's going to have Freddy in it. Awesome! All right, everyone, go! Like... That's basically
it. It was a little more than that, but
it's kind of what it felt like. I mean,
he submitted he wanted it to be darker and dirtier and a little more like Last House on the Left.
Yeah, well, no, but what was it? It's like, yeah, okay, it's got Freddy in it. It's like, it's the Poochie. All right.
He's the reason why Nancy was back. He was the one who called Heather Langenkamp to say, hey, do you want to do this again? And he put her in another movie.
Yeah.
And no matter how many drafts New Line did, they kept her in it.
But anytime, like, I see Wes Craven talk about, or, like, do, like, interviews about, like, the new Nightmare, or the Nightmare stuff, where it's just, like, that he wasn't necessarily a part of, or didn't want any a part of, like, to be a part of. And it's just, like, turn around, it's like, all I can see is that Poochie scene from The Simpsons. It's like, oh, just name him Poochie or something. All right, everyone okay with Poochie? Oh, yeah. Okay, like, that's awesome.
Something like that.
Yeah. However, I will say it is very rare when you get that many writers in a pot.
Not really.
No, I'm not saying, and it's good. Like, when you get too many writers, like, things start kind of getting wonky, or it's just...
They start trimming muscle tissue and connective tissue instead of fat.
It gets really, really bizarre. Or it's like when there's just so many rewrites and it's just like, it doesn't hold the same structure of like what the original guys wanted. And sometimes what the original guys wanted is 10 times better than what we got. And
it's, or it's like, worse.
No, I know. But I'm saying that, but it's like, but for Dream Warriors, like it was awesome. Like it really, really works.
Yes, Dream Warriors, the Catholic nightmare to follow up the gay nightmare shortly before the MTV nightmare.
Yeah. The one thing that I do want to touch on is, like, that I absolutely love with the Nightmare on Elm Street series, and I'm, because I'm an artist, I love the posters. Like, all the
beautiful.
The posters are gorgeous. And Dream Warriors, again, is pretty awesome. But as I'm looking at it, it's like, okay, you get the big Freddy eyes, right? The colors are vibrant. It's exciting. You got the kids standing on his finger knives.
Mm-hmm.
However, not one of those people that's on this poster is in this movie.
Well,
there's no representation of the actual kids.
Well, the girl is front and center is a representation of Nancy because she's got the white streak going in her hair. I think the dude in the red t-shirt's supposed to be Kincaid.
But he's a white guy.
But he's, yeah.
And then you have another jock. There's no other jock unless you count Teardrop Kid.
Joey?
Yeah. Unless you count Joey.
He's got the same haircut as Joey.
Kind of. But then, but he's also in jeans. And then you got the punk chick, which is...
it's supposed to be Taryn. It's Taryn. That is not what Taryn looked like.
Not at all. And also, not one person used a mace. And, well, Taryn was the only one that used a knife. But at the same time, it was just like, okay, I mean, I get that the girl in the center is supposed to be Nancy, but, like, that's, like, sexy bedtime Nancy. Like, Nancy never dressed like that. She was, and on top of that, when you have your, the, I guess, the new final girl is Kristen. Kristen's not on the poster.
Here's the weird thing, yeah. though. These posters were made before the movies were made.
No, I get it. And that's why I'm like, I love the artwork for it, and they look good, and it sells for... Because, I mean, it's a bunch of kids actually going into battle against Freddy, which is awesome. But at the same time, it's like, for me, as like a marketing standpoint, it's like...
I think you're nitpicking.
Oh, very much so. But like, that's what I was saying. It's like, I was looking at it, and I was just like, there's nobody in this movie on this poster, and it's just like... That's something where I just feel like you could kind of tell where it's like if they're doing these, you know, things ahead of time.
I think that's bullshit. I think that whole argument is fucking bullshit. Yes, part of it is because these posters are done in advance of the movies being made. Generally, they're commissioned before that, and they get the artist got, and it's all the same artist for all of them. But he basically just got some details about the film as that they currently had on paper. And even then, the script and the story was still evolving as it went. I think it's an evocative image. I think it's eye-catching. I think it does its job on the marketing front because it pulls you in and it creates an emotion. And you look at that and, yeah, it looks like four people about to go into battle with Freddy Krueger, which sums up what the movie was about. So it is fully evocative of what the whole point of the movie was a group of kids trying to take down a dream demon. Yeah.
No, I just, my nitpick about it, and again, it's a very mild one, it's just something that I noticed, was just the kids just not being in there. Or it's like just a weird representation of those kids. That's all. But I mean, it was just fun, but it's like, again, I'm out of every horror movie poster that I come across, the nightmare stuff has always been my favorite.
Well, and you look at those too, you don't get artwork like that anymore. You don't, like, nope. The old 70s Star Wars posters was the same thing. You don't get that kind of artwork anymore. Usually what we end up seeing now are a bunch of people's faces on the movie poster, or it's just like a solo shot of like Tom Cruise or something. It's like Jack Reacher. It's just Tom Cruise.
You want to know that something that I've noticed that I don't know if it's got to be done intentionally now, but the red and blue. Have you noticed
that's a trend? A lot of that shit's trendy. Yeah, if you watch certain eras of film, like in the 80s, there was a lot of that where it was the hand-drawn artwork and the posters done. They would commission an artist to do it. Now, a lot of, in the 90s, that post-Scream era, it was a lot of, you would see, like, just like in the Scream poster, you'd have your lead in the front and you would have just your cast of characters side by side lined up. The last several years is a lot of the red and blue or the orange and blue.
Like, I noticed it where it's like, because we were watching King Kong vs. Godzilla, mm-hmm. and the poster for that is literally red and blue.
Mortal Kombat, Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them that are doing that orange and blue, red and blue.
I think one of the new, one of the new Stranger Things promos that deals with, because they're doing like a battle thing in season four. So it's like they're, again, another red and blue deal.
Mostly just boring, yeah. And I kind of wish we could throw back to doing the hand-drawn art like it used to be back in the 70s and the 80s. Mostly in the 80s, that was very specifically like an 80s sort of a thing. You see a lot of, even like, not just horror movies, but big budget movies too, would do these hand-drawn posters that didn't necessarily spell out the film, but would evoke the emotion or the idea of what that film which is supposed to
be. I also guess would kind of help the film, because if it's just driving you in, it's not spoiling anything.
No, whereas, and you look like, at that, a, like, if I saw that on the side of a movie theater, I would be like, ooh, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, but then there's all, like, again, going back to my thing where it's like, if I see the poster, I'm like, oh my god, where was the kid with the mace? That's like stupid, basic bitch, like, going in, like, oh, I didn't see that at all. Or it's like, when you see a movie trailer.
Have you ever in your life done that? Where's the kid with the mace?
I did when I was a kid. Like, there was, because I would watch trailers.
Because you were a kid and you were dumb.
No, but I would watch a trailer and I would go, oh my god, I didn't see that part that was in the trailer. Because they cut it out of the movie or it went into, like,
just for the trailer.
Yeah, and or it's like, there was that scene.
Freddy versus Jason. Place your bets. That never made it in the movie.
Exactly. Or I thought it was a funny little nod to something like that where in Wreck-It Ralph, or Ralph Breaks the Internet, at the end of the movie, the girl in the car, she's playing her tablet. And she's like, oh, yeah, there was a scene in the movie that wasn't in there. And I don't, like, where is it? Like, she, like, the little girl just, like, popped up and, like, oh, don't worry about it, just play your tablet. And then they play the scene, like, that was in the trailer.
Pancake milkshake.
Yeah, so, the bunny gets the pancake. God, I love that movie. I'm sorry. But, yeah, that was the thing, was I could see where there's some people that would that do that. And me, personally, like, now that I'm just so invested, just all in with movies, that doesn't bother me. Even, like, spoilers don't bother me to a degree, because it's like I still need to watch the build-up for that.
Yeah, but if and you then, are worried about spoilers, get the fuck off the internet.
Oh, of course.
I've been saying this forever. Like, if you're like, oh, I don't want to know of a spoiler about this movie or this show, then get the fuck off the internet!
Oh, yeah, of course. And now it's like with Facebook.
You cannot be this stupid!
Yeah, and it's not me. Don't.
No, I'm talking about people in general.
Oh, no, I was like, I thought you were attacking me.
No, it's just people in general. They're like, oh my god, it's a spoiler. Get the fuck off the internet! Yeah. You cannot be this stupid as to think that the entire planet is going to revolve around you and the fact that you haven't seen this thing yet.
Or, like, really, like, you know, time manage yourself and actually go see the shit. It's like, for me, like, I actually feel terrible because I have yet to see the latest Scream movie. And I've been wanting to see it so long. But I still love Scream and I still want to see it and I want to support it. But it's like, with everything that's been going on in life and stuff like that, it's like, I'm at the point now, too. It's like, I don't want to go and spend money at the movie theater. Because it's just stupid expensive. It's like, I'd rather just wait for it to go on HBO or wait, you know, for
yeah, whatever streaming.
Or just for Blu-ray or anything like that. It's like, I'll pick it up then, $20, boom, and I own it. And I can watch it whenever I want.
Right, instead of $20 to watch it once.
Yeah, I think when the last movie that I went I paid for me and my buddy, and it was Mortal Kombat. Like, I was like, I have to go see it in
last
theaters.
Year.
Yeah. Have to go see it in the theaters, and I think I spent, for me and him, for the IMAX, we ended up doing, it was like, I think in total, it was almost like 60, 70 bucks.
With snacks and everything?
And yeah, I was like on top, and all I got was a drink, and that like pushed almost up to 80. I'm like, $80 for this? And then on top of that, it's like, my buddy, he's got two twin boys and an older son, so he's got three kids, and he's just like, think about how much money it would cost just to bring kids plus your wife.
That's why I'm so thrilled that there's a theater in Daytona that does $5 matinees, and I've taken my kids to a couple of those.
Yeah.
Because, oh, it's $15 for all of us to go, and we'll just grab lunch beforehand so we don't have to buy snacks.
Yeah, cool. I was like, just thinking about, like, a full family going to a movie theater is just like,
no, thank you.
Yeah, you're paying out the nose and it's like I have that fanboys moment. It's like, what if it sucks?
Yeah.
I just paid $100 for shit.
For this to suck.
So if Scream, if I hated the new Scream movie, it's like, well, shit, I don't want to pay for it.
I mean, I was on a date, so yeah. I didn't pay for it,
well,
but
lucky you.
Neither of us was terribly thrilled with it when we left. No. So.
But I mean, it's like, same thing like Morbius. Right, everyone was like, I was like, oh my god, I want to see Morbius. And then all of a sudden, when it came out, we're like, don't bother.
Yeah, I'm gonna wait for that to stream just to see, because I want to see what a shit show it is. I've heard all of the stories.
Well, because you were gonna take the kids, and you were like, "Hey, do you just want to join us? Because I know you wanted to see it." And I was like, "No, I don't."
We ended up seeing Sonic the Hedgehog instead,
which is a much better choice. Sonic was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was so good.
We geeked.
So back to Nightmare on Elm Street.
Sorry for the
because that was a tangent.
Yep.
No, the shit on the movie poster, it captured the emotion you were supposed to get, but it didn't give you the details, which is fine. I see no issue with that. This is the start of the wisecracking Freddy, and this is the only movie that managed to do it well. I'm in that camp.
This movie actually set up, I think, what everyone thinks of when it comes to Freddy. When you say Freddy Krueger, this is the start of it. Even though, like, Nightmare 1 had the whole... It's just the, you know, the dream monster and all that. And, like, that whole thing is always going to be the, you know, the OG canon. But this actually set up so much for what the rest of the series was going
to
be.
It did, and it did a great job of doing it. And this is the Freddy character I think most people think of when they hear Nightmare on Elm Street is this version of Freddy Krueger. But it set up... This was the movie that made that house iconic. This is the movie that set up his backstory, the bastard son of 100 maniacs. This is where we're introduced to Amanda Krueger. This is where we get introduced to Weston Hills and the Hypnosil thing, which gets picked up again in Freddy vs. Jason, which I think is great because I think that is... I think considering the psychosis part of the Freddy Krueger, just the idea, I think the... We didn't get enough of the mental health side of that.
Yeah, and then on top of that, it's not only are we actually getting the return of our main survivor girl with Nancy, we're also getting her dad, and we're getting the backstory of what actually happened
after
with her mom, you know, getting that dummy getting sucked through the door, the shitty prop. But like at the end of number one,
of all the things to do with the blow up doll,
yikes! But yeah, it's like, but it turned out that her mom actually died in her sleep, and that kind of set Nancy and her dad on this weird path. Lo and behold, her dad actually kind of kept, you know, took up the drinking like her mom did.
I don't think you could handle, A, what happened to his ex-wife. And I don't think you could handle, B, the truth of Freddy coming back. Because he did witness his ex-wife get sucked down into a bed in what looked like an electrical storm. Through the mattress, and then she was gone.
Yeah, that scene always
and somehow he had to try to help his daughter pick up the pieces, but you could tell that caused a huge rift between the two of them, because she, after she went off to college, she didn't have a relationship with her dad. It's implied that she just stopped speaking to him, and of course that's going to make the depression worse, and he's going to spiral deeper into the bottle, which he did, and to the point where he went from being a police lieutenant to a security guard.
Yeah.
He got kicked off the force for, I guess, being a drunk on the job, and he was not even a functioning alcoholic. He was just straight up alky. Which is sad. It's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, and that was... But, like, I like that they brought that back, but compared to what they did in Nightmare 2, where they just kind of referenced that, oh, this was... You know, the old, like, Nancy's old house, and, oh, here's her diary. And then you're just kind of reading a little bit about that. It's like, no, we're getting the full-fledged, like, okay, here's a little bit of a backstory for Nancy, but then, boom, like, we got, like, she's in it again. Like, she's ready to go, she's ready to battle, and she's ready to try and help these. And that was something that it was a weird dynamic, too, because she's supposed to be is she still an intern when she gets to the hospital?
No, she just finished grad school. So okay. I think she's starting her residency.
Okay, because I remember him saying, like, oh, we got a new intern coming in, but I couldn't remember if she was actually just interning or if she was going to be, like, full-fledged.
She was during her residency.
But that was the thing, was, like, so when she gets there, she is, because she is one of those kids... she can connect with them a whole lot easier than what the other doctors do.
Mm-hmm. She definitely had an advantage.
But I love, too, when it gets to the point where, you know, after I think it was like the first two deaths is when she goes, nope, we just got to go fuck this guy up. Like, we have to go and battle. And, like, she, like, gets... And the kids are all in. Like, they're just like, cool, let's do it. Like, we could do this, let's go. And I love that Goonies Stand By Me kind of vibe where it's just like, we're kids and we don't care what danger's in front of us. Like, we got an adventure and let's just beat the bad guy.
Yeah, I think part of that was because Nancy was very vulnerable and open with her experiences. And she was the only one that was willing to listen to the kids the whole way through instead of just pretending to listen only to tell them something that the doctors felt like they needed to hear. And that's not at all what they needed or wanted. So I think Nancy really earned their trust, just even just walking up to the threshold. And from the very minute she stepped on screen with Patricia Arquette, Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
With Kristen, and she finished the nursery rhyme and asked her where she heard that. That was the establishment of trust, because clearly Nancy knew what was going on and had a ton of experience with what was going on, and she was willing to give those kids a chance.
Yeah. And the one thing that I love throughout the movie is the whole, okay, guys, straight talk. And then, like...
Straight talk only.
Straight talk only. And, like, I love that line. It's just, like, that should have been the movie, the tagline for the movie is straight talk only.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the thing was, I love that they kind of built up on that premise of the group session with the kids. And where they, in a weird... Like, at first, you figure off, like, okay, that's why they're there. Like, none of them can sleep. They're all losing their minds, and they all have their own, problems.
No, the biggest reason why they were there is because they were all suicide attempts.
That's what I'm saying. Like, but it was a suicide attempt because of the same thing.
Yeah.
And then, like, it was the same dream and everything else that was affecting them that was making them do...
Well, on the outside, they looked like suicide attempts.
Yeah.
There was a little bit more, like, Taryn was also a drug addict. I think that had to do with her trying to numb the dreaming thing.
Yep.
But they were all dealing with the same, what was being dubbed like a mass psychosis, but that diagnosis won't work because in order for there to be a mass psychosis, they all kind of have to know each other to begin with, and they had never met.
Well, and that was the thing, Philip, that was something that, like, when they, the first group session that they had, like, Philip brought that up. He's like, how is it, like, I'm kind of surprised that no one finds it, you know, extremely interesting that we all have the same dream, and yet we've never met, and we never, like, mm-hmm. interacted with each other before, and I don't understand. And then, like, same thing, like Will, the nerd that, you know, I guess fell and then paralyzed
himself. He quote-unquote fell.
Yeah, well, he jumped, suicide attempt or whatever. But it was just one of those, like, it's like, that doesn't seem like something that would be, like, the way that Will was acting, it doesn't seem like that would be his character to do something like that. Not to say that, to put it off, that it wouldn't happen, you know, depending on, like, what the rest of his life would end up being like with, you know, being a nerd, being an outcast kind of thing. But he was he was probably the most, like, the happiest guy in that group. And for me, it's like, you know, being a, you know, TCG nerd, it's like I know that, like, I see those kids every weekend. Like, it's just,
yeah,
you know. And oh, by the way, guys, I'm a Pokemon professor now.
Just wanted to squeeze that in.
I'm excited.
Just
it's exciting. I can. I'm a Pokemon professor now. I took the test and I passed.
He's Professor Lunchbox now.
Yep. But yeah, but that was the thing, is like, I every weekend we play and I see all of the Magic the Gathering guys, and I see the D&D nerds, and it's just, that's what they do. Like, that's just them, and it's, but at the same time, Will, I could relate to him, you know, pretty good, just because he was just a good kid. And it's
a good kid, yeah. He was a nerd, and it was implied that he leapt to his death in a suicide attempt and fell, but I think he might have been pushed, because it's set up at the beginning with Kristen where she went to the bathroom after she thought she woke up from a nightmare, and Freddie cut her wrist. And then when her mom comes in, she sees Kristen standing there with a razor blade in her hand.
Which, so, that scene is so good.
Yeah, and that's when Kristen comes to, when her mom comes in and goes, oh my God, what's going on? And she looks down and Kristen faints. So what you could gather is that Freddie is making each of these kids look like the reasons their suicide attempts, or it made it look like his murder attempts were suicide attempts. It was him just sort of, or he was just trying to like soften them up for the final blow later.
Well, and that was like, I was trying to think back, like as I'm watching the film for the millionth time, I was trying to go back and I was like, okay, if we take the lore that became Freddy with the next coming movies, and like, you know, Freddy vs. Jason, all that stuff, right? Because in Freddy vs. Jason, he needed the kids to fear him so that he can get stronger.
Yeah.
In this movie, he already had the souls of the kids, so he kind of played like a Shang Tsung type of...
Well, Nancy even commented he's stronger than he was before.
Yes. So that's the thing, is like, with that, was he, as you said, tenderizing the kids to get them going. But then on top of that, as like a little part of me was like, was it a plot to get the rest of the kids together so that he could have an easier kill? Like so he could get all of his prey backed into a corner?
Bulk shopping at BJ's?
Basically. Huh. Yeah. Like, that was something, because it's like, why? It's like, yeah, they were all suicide attempts. Or was it kind of like, he wasn't strong enough, you know, back then to get them? And then it just happened to be like, oh, cool, like,
or
you guys are all together.
I would say maybe this was a way for him to lure Nancy back in, but he seemed awful surprised to see her.
Oh, very much so. Like, I feel like he was just like, oh, nope, I'm done with you guys. Like, I'm moving on to, you know, the fresh meat. But that was like, it was just weird that it's like, okay, when Nancy's like, oh, you're the last of the Elm Street kids. Well, that's the thing, is like, okay, I get that. Okay, all the parents that lived on Elm Street, and, you know, okay, you're the last of those kids. Well, in the later movies, like, Freddy's dead and stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, Elm Street, it's like that whole town went kid-free, right?
Yeah, I think because Elm Street was where the murders were happening, I think that's why they were dubbed the Elm Street kids, but I think it was really just the parents of Springwood, because it was a very small town.
And that was what I before we actually started recording, I mentioned that, where it's like, okay, Elm Street is one street, but it's like Springwood is the whole like town that actually gets affected by it. Yeah. And in the remake, it's like you have all the kids that are in that, at the Springwood Elementary School.
Oh, it's a preschool.
Or, that's what I'm saying. Or, okay. Is it?
It was preschool. Yeah, they were 4 and 5, so it was
preschool. Okay, so, but that's the thing, is like, so you have the Springwood preschool, and so all those kids could live on a completely separate street other than Elm Street. And that's where it's like, Elm Street, you know, rolls off the tongue much better than Springwood. But at the same time, it's just like...
Nightmare in Springwood?
Yeah, it doesn't work as well.
Well, the original idea of the Elm Street thing was because every town has an Elm Street.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Wes Craven's even famously said that it had some other links. It was the street that the college he taught in was on. It was also the street in Dallas where JFK got shot.
Yep.
It was on Elm Street. So there was some... there was a personal link, and then there was a zeitgeist link that he could work with. And a lot of people, you know, in the mid-8, he wrote this in probably, like, I don't know, it took him 3 years to shop it around, so he probably wrote it in 1980, 1981. So you're not that far removed from the JFK murder. So it was one of those things that it was still kind of fresh, and it would pull, it was another thing to help pull another emotion out. Subconsciously would make people think of danger.
Oh, like, and I'm all for it. I mean, it's like, when you think back to just the locations of this, I mean, and I get, like, okay, the Elm Street being Nancy's house. Like, that's where it was, because, like, Freddie didn't die on Elm Street. It was just those parents happened to live on that street.
No, that's where the murders were being committed, was on Elm Street.
Yeah. So, that's what I'm saying. Like, I got the gist of it, but it was just the whole Springwood thing where it's like all these kids don't. I was like, to have all these kids in this hospital that are, I was like, that's a big, like, hey, we should probably do some investigation, not just like, you guys, it's just all, you know, it's like sexual tension and you guys are just crazy, bunch of kooky kids. Like,
part of it was because the docs weren't taking them seriously. Both no. Dr. Sims and Dr. Gordon were just kind of like dealing with these kids as if they weren't out of a textbook.
Great, it's my dick that's killing me. That's one of the best lines. Like, God, Kincaid's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, God, he's so good.
Ken Sago's one of the best things in this movie. But a lot of that was the docs treating these kids as if they were stepped out of a, or pulled out of a textbook, and they weren't. They weren't taking into account their individual stories or their individual personalities. They weren't taking into account their backgrounds, where they came from, who their parents were, what their stories might be. Instead, they were trying to treat all of them the same because they were all failed suicide attempts and they all ended up in the same place. But you have very different things. You have something traumatized Joey to the point where he couldn't speak anymore. Taryn was a drug addict. You could tell that Jennifer was a bit neurotic. She wanted to be a television actress so very badly, but you could see that she was just a little amped up. You had Will, who was the super nerd, but he was a lot more gentle than the others. And then you had Kincaid, who had a hot fucking temper. And then Kristen was being treated as if she was just being a drama queen. Like, you saw that
in her relationship. She's wanted attention.
Yeah, you saw that in her relationship with her mom, when her mom was making comments like, the nightmares started when I took her credit card away.
I was like, is that, did you really take her credit card away? Or are you just Woof. Like, yeah. I was like, okay, so the two characters that I absolutely despised in this movie was Kristen's mom. And
you're supposed to. So yeah, she did a good job. But,
and then it was Dr. Sims.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
both really, of those women.
I just do not like. And again, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's good writing because that's what you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's like, I kind of had that same kind of, was it Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? It's like, you're not supposed to like her at all. Like, you're because you're on the side of Jack Nicholson in that movie, and you are trying, like, she's the one battling against him. Or, like, you know, The Breakfast Club, where you got the principal. It's like, you know, okay, it's like, it's, or any college movie where you got a dean or a principal or something like that that's, like, combating against the frat.
Well, it's the authority, you know, figure.
Exactly.
So you've got, in this case, you've got the kids versus the authority figures. And then you have Dr. Gordon, who is somewhere in the middle. He's trying to play the middleman between the two. He's trying to keep his job by appeasing Dr. Sims, but he's also trying to figure out the best way to help the kids because I think he genuinely cares.
Yeah. But that was something where I was like, it was good writing because you are rooting for these kids. And this is a type of movie where it's, when the kids start dying, you're like, oh no. Like, and that mm-hmm. is something where, especially for, you know, when you watch horror movies like we do just constantly.
Well, slashers in particular, because of the type of characters that are built around the killer, they're just treated as meat.
Yeah, it's like you're waiting for them to die. You're like, yeah. Oh my God, please kill her.
But
please
every,
kill him. Like, he's terrible.
Every single one of the kids in this group are very likable. Even Kincaid, who on paper shouldn't be terribly likable, is super likable.
He's the most likable, which is,
well, because he's very open.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot. There's something magnetizing about someone being that open with their feelings and those sorts of things. And being very transparent. That's another thing, too, that Kincaid had, was he was very transparent. You never had to guess how he was feeling, where you stood with him, none of it.
Yeah.
So there's not, normally in a lot of these type of movies, there's always at least one. There's always the Friday the 13th remake. There's always a Trent.
Mm-hmm. Always.
In the group where you're just like, man, I can't wait for that fucker to die. My God, can he die now?
Yeah, and then when he actually gets you, you're like, it's just, it's a yes. It's like cutting into like construction paper. It's just that satisfying.
Oh,
like,
yeah. And but there's not one of those in this movie. You get attached to the kids. You are rooting for them to pull through. And out of all of them, I would say the ones that probably hit the hardest, I would say Taryn. Hers probably hits the hardest because she had been working so hard to get clean, and she basically died of drug overdose.
The one thing that I loved about her scene, one is that she saw herself as a more powerful or like stronger woman. And the whole, I love the 80s, like, she looked like a cockatoo. Like, just, she looked like a parrot.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, just give her the full mohawk, man. Like, just go for the whole shebang. I was like, that thing just looked...
It was straight up the back, which was weird.
She looked like a Ninja Turtles villain. Like, just...
And her battle line was really cheesy. In my dreams, I'm beautiful.
And bad.
It's like, ooh.
Or no, when Freddie, like, he flicks his glove open, and then she's like, let's dance. It's like, oh my god.
But, yes, those lines were cringy as fuck. But a good part of it, too, was you saw her at the beginning of the movie. She was very nervous, very meek, very reserved. She was very clearly not sure of herself. And then she gets her quote-unquote dream powers, where she's beautiful and bad. And she's brave.
And like, and that was something where I loved that each one of the kids was just like Freddy, come the fuck on. And that was something where I think it was in one of the I forget which writer it was, but for Freddy vs. Jason, like that was actually going to be the opening for the movie, is where Freddy's just like, kids are falling asleep so they can go and fuck with Freddy. And then it turns around where Freddy's like, no, I got to get my groove back. And that's when he goes to get Jason to scare everybody again. But it was like just that whole premise of like, nope, kids are falling asleep to go after Freddy. Not like, okay, like I'm scared of that. So I like that dynamic with this movie where it's like with Taryn, where she's like, let's dance. Like, let's go.
Those kids are super empowered by the end of the movie because they were all pretty beat down, broken at the beginning, and then getting to the end of it, because they had Nancy and they had Dr. Gordon come around and actually start listening to them, that made a huge difference in their ability to fight off the demon.
Yeah.
Which, if we're going with this sort of Catholic Christian symbolism that this movie is super heavy-handed about, they're literally trying to fight off their demons. Because they all had some type of vice or addiction or those mental health issues that a lot of people will call their demons. So
Freddy needed to go see the Lord.
But that's one of those things that you would do to do that. It's just...
And the one thing that I love, too, about the kills for this movie is that looking back for, like, Freddy, or like Nightmare 2, it was more about the possession, which that's never really came back in the series, so it's kind of like its own little thing.
Yeah, Nightmare 2 is basically its own little island.
Yeah. There's little things in there, but it's just like...
The connective tissue is real lean.
Very, very lean.
Yeah.
But, so, with Nightmare 1, where all the kills were just when they just fell asleep... And there was nothing that was really tying them for the dream. And that's where, like, with Dream Warriors, I find it's, like, extremely entertaining because Freddy's using those personalities for their deaths. And that's where the rest of the series is going to actually pick up with... I mean, they get, you know, kind of a little bit goofier and a little sillier, and Freddy, you know, starts having, like, you know, dad joke bonanzas all over the place, but like,
mm-hmm.
But with this one, each little, like, even though he had that little joke or a little, like, one liner that tied to it, it sold and it was still, like, creepy or scary. And I mean, each little death was built around that person to make it more personal, and it sold on every level.
Oh, yeah. It definitely did. Because there was the drug addiction from Taryn. Or that one, like I said, hits the hardest. And then Will being tapping into his Dungeons & Dragons nerd and the ability to walk. Like, he was almost run down by this demonic wheelchair. So there's a lot of that stuff that was going on there.
Did you have a favorite death scene?
Oh, Phillips.
Phillips,
100%. His, no matter, I've seen this movie several dozen times. I've seen this movie a lot. To the point where, like, I put it on to watch it last night as a refresher, but I kind of could have it in the background and just, like, pick in bits and pieces. But Phillips always, that initial start when Freddy rips the blankets off of him and cuts into his arms and legs and pulls out either the veins or the tendons or whatever body part that pulled out of there, and he turned Phillip into a marionette. Because he built puppets as a hobby.
Yeah.
But that... Oh.
That scene, like, every time, like, we mention that, it's like, I always remember you going, like, that scene always gets me because it's just, it's too gross.
It is, but it's one of the best ones because it, no matter, again, I cannot tell you how many times I've seen this movie, but every single time, Phillip's death, I know it's coming, I know what it's going to look like, and I know what's happening, but it's still... Yeah.
And yeah, Phillips is also probably is my favorite as well. But I like it not only that scene with the slicing him open and then turning him into the marionette. But I love that when he's first introduced to Nancy, like, that's his thing, is that he sleepwalks. It's like, okay, well.
Well, now it makes you wonder: was he really sleepwalking?
Technically, he was, but he was
being made to.
He was being made to. But and then on top of that, where he's making the marionettes and, like, so they are slowly dripping in the big, like, his crescendo, and that whole thing was just and on top of that, the rest of the kids were selling the shit out of that.
And he was the first death, so they made it hit hard. Yeah.
And on top of that, it was another amazing use of Freddy. Because not only that, it was like I actually want to try and like rebuild it, but I want to make the Freddy marionette. Like, I want to try and figure out a way to, like, really, you know, just arts and crafts that damn thing and actually, like, make my own Freddy marionette.
Yeah, he didn't say what. I think he made it out of paper mache because he said they wouldn't let him have anything to carve with.
Yeah, but that was the thing. Is like, I just want to just make it, but I love that it's like Freddy turns him, like, he forms into the marionette, drops down, and they have, like, I wish they would have used that a little bit more with the stop animation.
I love that they dabbled with the Harryhausen thing. They did the stop motion with the puppet at the beginning, and he grew into life-size Freddy. And then they did it towards the end with the skeleton in the junkyard.
the Army of Darkness.
Yeah, scene. It was a deadite. And it was a deadite. Totally, and considering the Sam Raimi, Wes Craven tete-a-tete through the 80s, like, even though this was not a Wes Craven-directed movie, I still really appreciated that little... It might have... All I know, it was 100% by accident, but that little Raimi nod, because it did, it looked like a deadite.
Yeah. I was actually expecting, like, to hear Freddy's voice come out of the skeleton, but it's like...
just, like, these weird roar grunty sounds.
Yeah. But that was the thing, is, like, so the Freddy marionette was probably one of my favorite things, especially, like, as a kid. Like, that was just so cool to actually see him, like, he's using the dream. The kid's not awake. Like, in the dream, like, he's in bed, he's chilling. So Freddy's doing that just as a, like, he could have just, you know, grew and just showed up. But, like, that
and
was
he could have just walked in through a wall.
Yeah, but that was a nice little thing where it's like, okay, I'm going to turn into the marionette, and then I'm going to grow, and then I'm going to turn you into a marionette. So I was like, that was, and then on top of that, where he's hovering over the building, doing the marionette thing. I was like,
cut the strings.
And you can see where it's just the superimposed, like, you know, large image, where it's like, so he's finally using, like, his own dream powers. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, one, they didn't really have the budget for it in number one. Like, it was just more of like, he's just going to show up and climb on the walls or, you know, something like that.
Well, they had almost three times the budget for this movie than they did for the first movie.
Yeah.
The first movie, I think, it was like $1.2 million, like somewhere in that ballpark. This was $4.5 million. So they had three times the budget to play with. And you can tell a lot of that went to special effects. It went to the worm Freddy, the penis Freddy.
Yeah.
The one that tried to swallow Patricia Arquette. My God, the pornography. It went to the marionette. It went to the prosthetics on Philip. It went to the glass breaking at the end with the mirrors. And you can tell they... Again, there's no CGI because it's 1980. Well, it came out in 87, so they're filming this in 86. There's not really any CGI. I mean, Tron had already been out at this point, but let's be honest, that was a little... They were still using Frisbees and bike and hockey helmets to make their costumes.
I had one of those hockey helmets, by the way.
Yeah. So this wasn't anything that they were going to be able to use, and it was still very expensive.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to have access to it anyway.
It worked. Like, that was the thing is, like, when you look back at a lot of, like, old horror movies where you're just like, oh man, that gag did not pan out.
No,
well,
but they
worked
did
out good.
No, but they did the Harryhausen stop motion puppets, and they still made it look, I mean, it clearly is aged because it's 35 years old, but it still looks pretty good,
it
all things
up.
Considered.
Yeah, but like that was, I love Philip, but I mean, I always say this one, it's like, with the deaths, it's, you know, the Welcome to Primetime Bitch. That's like Slayer's Rain and Blood. Everyone likes that goddamn song.
I know,
it's like,
it's even signed on my dead doll.
Yeah, she's got one of the Living Dead dolls. It's the original Freddy one. And we actually went to Spooky Empire and met Robert Englund. Such a sweet man. And
yeah,
so you got that sign, which is...
Yeah, and then he's like, well, what do you want it to say? I was like, I don't know, just pick something. And so I gave him my name, and he wrote, hey, Megan, welcome to Primetime, bitch, on the inside of it. And I was as giddy
as a schoolgirl.
You
giggled. I was like, you know how many times he's probably, like, he's gotten that response where it's like, I don't know what to write. You write whatever you want. He's like, cool, like, easy. Like,
yeah.
Low-hanging fruit. But I was like...
It's super low-hanging fruit. But it's a crowd pleaser.
It works.
And then Tyler Mayne, I had signed by Michael Myers, but he just scribbled his name on it. There was nothing personalized.
Again, another sweet man. Like, he was
very
such
large.
He scared the shit out of me.
He was so big. My friend Kat was with us. Sidebar. Oh, my friend Kat was with us. She's 5'2", and Tyler Mayne is 6'8". So she basically came up to his belly button.
He could have grabbed her head like a basketball and just like picked her up.
Yeah, and,
like, and
she got a picture with him. And I was like, how did you get both of, like, to take that picture, I had to step real far back in order to get both of their heads in the frame. That was a big difference. But I digress. Remind me to tell you about the time we met Spencer Charnas at Spookala.
Yeah. That was something. That was our son's first convention, which is really cool.
Yep.
So.
I was very fortunate to take him to that.
Yeah,
so,
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So, anyway,
The Welcome to Primetime Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that scene is also super impactful because it also has cameos in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dick Cavett and Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah. So, I was like, that's actually really cool where you would... Wouldn't get that too often, and I mean they were actually playing themselves, and that's cool. So and I love that they tied it in, and then the whole thing where his arms come out. Good.
Yeah, but this is the one. Dream Warriors is the nightmare movie that you can point to and say this is when Freddy was becoming pop culture.
Yep.
The other two movies was like, yeah, okay, but. Because they had Dick Cavett, who was a very popular late-night talk show host at the time, that was when you go, hang on, something's happening here. And Freddy is creeping into the zeitgeist, and he's getting to be very popular because it was shortly after this that they released Freddy's Nightmares, and all of the merchandising was coming out with the t-shirts and the toys and the pajamas and the bed sheets and the 800 numbers or 900 numbers and the replica merchandise, gloves and masks and Halloween costumes.
So weird. I mean, like, because, like, and they're marketing it to kids, and I'm like,
but he was a child molester.
It's just, well, the molester thing didn't really kind of
that was subtext.
Yeah, but still, he's killing kids.
At the very least, we're getting kid murder.
So it's like, I mean, I was one of them. I remember dressing up as Freddy, and my dad went as Freddy Krueger for Halloween one year, and like, so I kept his hat. And
do you know when I was in it was kindergarten or first grade? Do you know how many Freddies were in my school? There were so many kids dressed up as Freddy Krueger.
Oh, yeah.
And there was almost as many dressed up as Jason Voorhees. These are not movies meant for kids.
Yeah.
But kids loved him. He was everywhere.
And that's where it's like, you know what? I mean, when, like, I guess that's like when the parenting really comes into play. And it's like, what kind of parent are you?
Good parent.
Yes, very much so. Because, like, for us, and let's actually talk about it. But it's like, you know, our son, like, his first slasher movie was Scream.
Which is not a bad one to start with. Both of our kids ended up finishing Dream Warriors with me today, this morning. Yeah, because I went to bed with 20 or 30 minutes of it left. I was like, oh, I'll finish it tomorrow. I just was kind of, it was getting late and I wanted to go lie down. And so I was like, I'll just finish it in the morning. And while I was folding laundry, I turned it back on and the kids came out. And our daughter was kind of nervous about it. She was saying, Freddy's kind of scary. I don't know. She just wasn't sure. But our son was super into it. And he was asking questions and talking a lot because he didn't see it from the beginning. So he's picking up basically at the crescendo of the movie. And I was like, just sit quiet, watch. You're going to see Freddy get his butt kicked. And he's like, okay. So he's super into it. He's into it. And he's watching the whole thing. And I think it was the mirror breaking scene. He was like, wow. Like, he just thought the whole thing was really cool. I think he's ready to watch Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th and Halloween. And I think he can get into some of the big ones.
Well, like he watched Scream and I think he watched Halloween 4 or 5.
He's seen one of the Halloween movies. I don't remember which
one. Oh, no, it was Curse. It was when we were doing our whole retrospective. We were watching the movies and I think he ended up watching Curse. And that one, again, it was super tame and it was like, he got the gist of the character and he could actually see that it's like he understood what was going on.
And when I took him to the convention a couple of weeks back in May, he recognized them. There was like a trio of guys dressed up as Michael Myers that were going around and taking pictures with everybody. Because one of them was like the original Carpenter one. One of them was dressed as the Halloween Kills with like the burn.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them was somewhere in between. I couldn't tell you which movie
it was. Was it the zombie one? Or was
no,
it?
Oh, okay. No.
Oh, it's from the...
No, because they were all wearing the blue jumpsuit. None of them were wearing the gray.
Okay.
Yeah. But the three of them, we could tell it was three buddies who decided we're just going to do three different versions of Michael Myers. And they were wandering around the convention taking pictures with everybody with their plastic knives and shit. Mm. So it was cute.
But that was the thing is like, you know, or something like he's getting really into it. I mean, granted, because we're really into it, but it's like we're going about it the right way. And I actually think that Dream Warriors is a maybe like, with the minus the language, but the rest of it is actually like, I mean, you'd have to kind of like, you know, pick and choose like how, like, because like the Phillips death scene, that might be a little much.
I don't think so with him. It's 100% dependent on the kid. I'm kind of taking the philosophy my parents took with me. If they think that I can handle, if I tell them I think I can handle it, they're going to be like, okay, we'll give it a shot. And kind of, they let me take the lead. So I'm kind of wanting to do the same thing with our kids where it's like, if they are curious about it or they want to take the lead. Okay,
I mean,
guys.
When our son is like super into Five Nights at Freddy's and Poppy Playtime, so it's all these like horror style games.
YouTube and
he
stuff.
He is
like
in it. I mean, he knows the lore. He's gotten the comics. I was like, and like that's about animatronics, like a pizzeria animatronic, like a Chuck E. Cheese coming to life, and you're stuck inside of the pizzeria at night
and you have to survive.
Yeah, the animatronics think that you're an animatronic that is outside of your costume and they try to put you in one. So that's how you die, is they put you in a robot and it crushes you and I was like, that's terrifying. And then like as the lore goes on, it's like it's not only that they're killing people, they're killing kids. Like that's the thing, is late at night the things go haywire and all of a sudden like
yeah.
I was like, you know what? It's like
Maybe Halloween's not so bad.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I think that's, I mean, that's pretty gruesome, man. What's actually hilarious is, like, my mom is a big Christian woman. And, like, she always, like, when I growing up, like, I was, like, listening to Korn and Marilyn Manson. I was that guy that was, like...
Oh, even to this day, she's like, why do you paint those things? Why do you watch those movies? Why do you listen to that music?
She supports me, and she, like, she...
But she has so many questions.
She loves it, but she just doesn't understand, like, where did that come from? And then all of a sudden, like, our son will turn around, and he starts trying to explain to her Five Nights at Freddy's, and I'm like, dude, like, she doesn't want to hear about kids getting killed. And I was like, and then on top of that, like, our son just started going to school, and I'm like, dude, you gotta, like, pick and choose, like, what to talk about, because you don't want to go around and start talking about kids dying, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, we're gonna have to bring you into the principal's office and have a little chatty chat, like, nah. No, but it's
he's
just
not
like,
bringing dead animals to school, he'll be fine.
That's what I'm saying.
So, that's probably a good point. I would say Dream Warriors it's rated R, but... mostly for the language. There's not even a ton of blood in it, so...
Well, one of my other favorite scenes was when they were doing their final session, and all the kids were, I'm beautiful and bad, and, like, you know, Will standing up and all that stuff. But Joey going off with the nurse.
Oh, boobies!
Titties. Like, that would be the only other scene. I'm like, all right, buddy, I think we gotta skip this one a little bit, or, you know, just fast forward just a little. You know, that's something, you know, you gotta ease yourself on into there.
We don't want to encourage a spring awakening too early.
Yeah, because, oh my god, Jamie Lee Curtis and Trading Places.
That was your spring awakening.
Holy boobies. I need a moment. I'm having a Selma Hayek moment right now. Holy nuts.
Now you're thinking about Jamie Lee Curtis and Selma Hayek? Boobies. There's so much boobies.
I need a moment.
Okay, so I'm going to just go ahead and carry
but no, but
on.
That scene was like, I really love that scene because it really pushed. And again, it was something where they were setting up with Joey, just, you know, kind of puppy love from afar. He didn't really know how to, like, because he couldn't talk, couldn't interact. He was trying to be nice to this, you know, super hot nurse. And then in the
Hello,
dream.
Hello, nurse.
Oh, I love the reference. But then she gets naked and goes to, you know, have the, you know, the sexy time with him. But then, like, my favorite part of that is when she's, like, when they're making out. And then all of a sudden her eyes open up. And it's just how evil that her eyes went. I was like, for that actress, I was like, that is terrifying.
And then she had a grip on his tongue and started pulling it out of his mouth.
Well, that was the thing. Was it his tongue or was it her tongue?
Well, when she was pulling away, I want to say that was supposed to be his tongue. But then when she was barking out the straps to tie him up to the headboard,
yeah,
and the
tongue
footboard.
Straps.
Yeah.
Did you notice that they wiggle?
Yes.
They were like worms. Like,
yeah.
It was just like, they wiggled. I didn't realize
they were,
that at
Yeah,
first.
They were puppets, and they were their own little animatronic thing, yeah.
This is super creepy.
Yeah, they're waving at you. It's gross. But yeah, he's basically been bound to this bed, this hospital bed, with tongues, and it's so dirty. Oh my god, it's so dirty.
But then even then, it's like, you still get a Freddy one-liner with the, oh, feeling tongue-tied. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I was like, that scene is just, it works because of all the buildup, and then when you get to it, one, you also get that big, like, oh my god, like, she's, you know, she's topless, and they're, you know, showing the front and showing the goods, and it's like, you got that little bit of a, hey, how you doing, type of scenario going on, but it was just it's like, oh my god, and all of a sudden, then, like, she just turns, like, just a complete evil monster.
Well,
and then
the scenes,
goes to Freddy.
The behind the scenes on that, she was supposed to have Freddy's makeup on. So there was supposed to be a transition where she had the burn makeup and then, like, her tits out. So, but they couldn't get it to look right.
Yeah.
So they just skipped it.
Yeah. Well, like, that was something where, it's like, I think that would have been kind of cool if they could have pulled it off where it's like, maybe she, like, backed up to, like, I don't know, like, do some type of provocative, like, move or something like that, and then all of a sudden you can see the burns, like, developing, and, like, them forming, and then maybe they do a cut to Joey, where he's just like, oh, no, and then goes back, and then it's, you know.
Yeah, they could probably do that now with the CGI. I don't know if they could American Werewolf in London, the burns.
Yeah.
You can do it with, it's easier to do it with hair.
But even then, it's like, the way that they did it, I think it worked just fine, because it was just like, it was one of those things where you knew something was going, was bad when Joey gets separated. And I like that when they all get into the dream, it's Freddy's like, oh, cool, the buffet line opened up.
And he's Joey's bait.
Yep.
Joey was the bait dog.
And I like, too, where they did that whole thing of, like, choose your words wisely. Because when it was Kincaid, Kristen, and Nancy, when they get there and you could see Joey over the pit and he's still, you know, tied up. And then Freddy just kind of like you know, kind of just being an asshole. But then she's like, oh, let him go. He's like, your wish is my command. And it's just like, all right, cool. Like,
yeah. And so Nancy had to swoop in and be like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. He's like, I'm probably going to do it anyways. But, you know, it was fun.
I mean, she asked.
Yeah.
It's like, how could he not oblige? She asked.
But that's where it's like, I always think back to, like, the Wishmaster.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, you asked for it. Which, again, I still say is so underrated. I love Wishmaster.
Yeah, go back and listen to that episode. We did that episode 3 years ago.
Actually, in the... because we didn't do Wishmaster 2, did we?
We'll get to that series okay. here.
Yeah, no. But I actually... so, during our hiatus, I went back and watched... I think it was 2 and 3.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's like, they are goofy. Like, they
think?
No, but at the same time, it's like, but there's still a lot of fun. Like, I think it was Wishmaster 2, he goes to prison.
Okay.
And he basically goes up to every inmate, and he's like, he does the whole thing, like,
what's your wish?
And then, like, they, like, get, so that's how he gains power against all these
taking advantage of delinquents and stuff like inmates.
Yeah, and I was just like, it's such a weird dynamic, but it's just like, at the same time, I'm like, I'm in. Like, I like it.
Yeah, so, Dream Warriors, as far as endings go, the Consecrated Ground thing, I think, worked fairly well. I do like that they let Nancy live all the way to the end of the movie and then killed her off, like, last minute. I think that worked really well instead of trying to kill her off, like, 15 minutes in.
other franchises that we know?
Yeah. I think what they did in part 4 with Joey, Kincaid, and Kristen just killed them off in, like, 10 to 15 minutes.
I hated that. I was like...
So, you know, you want to keep your legacy characters around for a minute. You don't have to keep them around forever, but here's looking at you, Scream. But the whole thing, I like that Nancy made it to just about the end of the movie, and because she was going to be Kristen's weakness was kind of the idea there. But they took out the last two legacy characters in her and in Thompson, her dad. Which was good. The Consecrated Ground thing, though,
but I mean,
I go back and forth.
Yeah, but I mean, when you really get into it, where it's like, okay, well, the lore, this is the third installment, and at the same time, there's no real big lore that we know to this day. So this is all still development, and with each Freddy movie, they keep trying to add something new or some thing for Freddy to do to keep building on that character. And Freddy is, and one of the reasons why I like Freddy probably is like one of my top like horror movie like characters. Pennywise is my all-time favorite, but Freddy I love just because of like just what they try to do with continuing to build on him. It's not like Jason where it's just like hack and slash, like all you're doing is just throwing more people at him, and it's like maybe a little bit different scenarios when they threw him into, what was it, you know, Jason on a boat, you know, like okay,
Jason takes a cruise ship,
yeah, different location, but then all of a sudden, oh, now like Jason in space is like the most bonkers like idea. But again, it's something completely different that to build on. You're still getting hack and slash. It's just again, different kind of. When you get like, was it like Super Shredder Jason, like Mecha Shredder or Mecha Jason? Mecha Jason.
The thing that I give Nightmare on Elm Street credit for, good or bad, is that they. Each movie has been in the hands of someone different. It's been written by somebody different. It's been directed by somebody different. And again, for good or bad, they are trying stuff. And sometimes the shit they throw at the wall sticks. Other times it does not. But they're willing to give it a go. I would say that Dream Warriors, even to some degree, I would argue Dream Master, but we'll get to that next week. Dream Warriors, I would say, is probably peak of that original run, because it's this was the up, and then it kind of plateaued with part four, and then it starts to drop pretty heavy until we get to New Nightmare, which it peaks again.
Yeah, well, and that was something where, like, thinking back to, you know, just metal bands or just bands in general, where it's just like, you know, when you get their first album, you're just like, holy shit, this is bananas, this is so good.
Sophomore Slump.
And Sophomore Slump comes in, you're like, oh, that's kind of not the greatest. And then third's like, oh, I kind of like their old stuff better. And it's like, with this, I actually kind of feel like, because this is where they really set up the Freddy lore with the, you know, the maniacs and the mom being raped or the being a nun and then all that stuff, like that really just kind of just gave extra meat to the meal. And that was something where you already had all the dream stuff that Wes Craven set in motion, which is absolutely phenomenal, and it's super interesting. And then you just kind of keep it, like, you pick it back up, because Sophomore Slump, but then this one, I actually feel like, because it set up so much that, and on top of, like, adding in, like, the Hypnosil and adding in just different types and sequences.
Well,
and
the elements that were introduced in this movie have been called back, and I think we mentioned this a little earlier in the episode, have been called back in several different iterations in different movies. So
I almost feel like this is the first, if you really want to think about it.
This is the completion of the foundation, I think. Yeah. After this, they tried to build a very shaky house on top of it. But I would point to...
It's a load-bearing poster.
Yeah. We ran out of floorboard, so we just painted the dirt. Pretty clever.
That's the reference for shitty movies.
That's how it feels sometimes. Welcome to your new master bedroom. Ow, my nose. So they built a pretty shaky house on top of this excellent foundation, but I think Dream Warriors is the absolute crux of the series. This is where we get probably the best version of Freddy Krueger. I would argue the best iteration of the character is in a different film, but the best version of Freddy Krueger is in this one. This is where you get just enough of the humor to soften the blows a little bit, but it's not so over the top that you're just rolling your eyes the whole time.
And that was the thing, was like, from a lot of the kill scenes from later movies are very creative, and I love the art form and just the special effects.
It just gets silly.
Exactly. And like, there's like the one scene where like Freddy puts on the sunglasses. It's like, it's iconic, but at the same time, it's like, it's Looney Tunes Freddy. It's not...
Right, and I don't want Looney Tunes in my slasher movies.
Yeah, and this felt more like Freddy from Nightmare 1, but, like, better put together.
Yeah, it was more solid.
Yeah, and that was something where I loved the feel of it, where even when the kills were happening, there was an intensity to it. And, like, the one scene where it was Kristen, where I believe it was the first time where she actually goes in... Oh, it was the snake scene. So that whole build-up to that, where she falls asleep and then wakes up and she's in front of the house. And you see the kids doing the jump rope thing. The little girl in the big, poofy, yellow dress.
That was the beginning of the movie. That was even before the snake.
Yeah, but no, they tag that kind of together.
The snake came later. That was another dream, because that was after she met Nancy.
Yeah.
But that one.
But yeah, so that one where she meets the little girl and she's going through the house, and, you know, gets to the boiler room, and, like, that whole thing where she picks up the girl and clearly ain't a little girl. Like, you could tell it's a dummy, but
you're hurting me.
Yeah. But then, like, when she runs into the room with all the hanging bodies, and I'm like, that's dark. Like, yeah, that's good. Like,
this one has just the right amount of darkness that I want from my Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Some would argue because they're goofy, you should appreciate them for their goofiness. No, I want the darkness because you're playing with a lot of psychological stuff. Yeah.
And I mean, and the whole Kristen thing, the second time around, like where the tricycle comes in and it's got the blood trail going, I was like, how fucking cool is that? And then it just melts? Come on.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's good. That's just good booking right there. But I mean, like, that's just like...
Well, even in the beginning of the movie, when we get to meet Kristen, it sets up everything we need. If you've never seen a Nightmare on Elm Street movie before, ever, this is your first one you're walking into, it sets up everything you need to know. She's doing her damnedest to stay awake. Something is wrong. She's washing down Folger's crystals with Diet Coke to stay awake and blasting her music and doing arts and crafts projects just to avoid going to bed. Yeah.
And I like that, too, where it does feel like it's a movie where you could just jump right in. The only thing that you would... If you're really into it and you wanted to know more about it, it's like... You watch number one just to get Nancy's side, so you know what she went through.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's enough to where she goes, I know what you went through. And they can kind of just focus on the kids, which is exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, Nancy, not quite secondary, but she definitely was less of a key player.
Yeah. She was the head coach.
Yeah. But we were really focused on the players on the ice. So, yeah. Skull rating. What you got, Lunchy?
I have to say that out of the entire Friday.
Did you forget what we were watching?
Yeah, I'm an idiot. Out of the whole Nightmare franchise, this is my favorite. Out of all of them, like, this is my go-to. Anytime, like, someone's like, hey, let's watch a Nightmare movie, it's this one and New Nightmare. Like, those are always my hands down. I'm giving this one a 5. Like, the
solid.
Characters are awesome. Even, like, the shitty ones that you're not supposed to like Dr. Simmons and the mom. It's like that scene where, Nancy and, what's his name?
Neil
is, getting fired, after Joey goes into the coma. That was something where I was just like, she goes in and she's like, I'm so sorry, Neil. But I told you. It was like, you bitch! Like, you're like, oh my god, what a backhanded sorry. Like, that was just...
Oh, yeah.
And then the whole thing of...
She smacked him over the head with it.
Like, or then the whole, like, hypnocell thing, when he's just like... He's like, oh, well, if it doesn't work, then I'll just resign. Or it's like, if he doesn't want
to... Well, that was the funny thing with the Joey thing, and I think we forgot to mention this, was Joey slipping into the coma. Dr. Sims wanted to blame that on the hypnocell. They hadn't gotten the hypnocell into the hospital yet.
All they had was the idea of hypnocell.
Yeah.
They,
like, never... nobody was taking it yet.
Yeah. And that was the thing, was, like, when Joey went into the coma, they couldn't take the hypnocell because then they couldn't do their final session. Like, that was the thing, was, like, so, and Nancy, I think, got fired because of that, because of introducing the idea of hypnocell. Or it's like, and she being a troublemaker and kind of rallying the kids up and stuff like that. So there's probably just like, okay, we just need
to... Well, they blamed a lot of that. Yeah. She didn't have tenure. She was brand new. She'd only been there for a handful of days.
Even the head doctor was like, I'm not interested in anything that you have to say. It's like, your opinions mean nothing to me. I was like,
okay.
Damn. That's like, if there was a hype man behind him, she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
like,
really.
Mic drop. All right,
so you gave this thing a 5.
Yeah, so... Kills are awesome, and the acting, there's a couple cheesy parts in there, but you know what? It's a good cheese, and there's not a lot of it. It's
delicious,
just
cheese.
Just enough. It's just it's
a touch of, like, a sprinkle of cheese on your popcorn.
Yeah, a little bit, or, like, you know, like on top of your pizza. It's like you already got, like, a good layer of cheese, but it's like just a little bit of that parm.
Just for that nibble, that bite of cheese.
So good.
So I gave this one a 4.5. There's a few things here and there that I'm just kind of like, with the eye rolly. But, overall, this one's probably my second favorite in the series. The acting was so much better, especially from Heather Langenkamp. Oh my God. in the first one.
there's
woof.
She did a lot better, but there's a couple of parts in there that was just like, it's a little.
The acting was 1,000,000% better in either of the two prior films.
Yeah.
Heather Langenkamp did step up. She was a whole lot better. She was much more believable. It was less cringy. I liked that hint of a romance between her and Neil. That was really cute.
I mean, who just has a dinner with candle lights and in a fire?
Oh, no.
Like, come on, man.
They got busy after. Are you kidding me?
There's Barry White playing somewhere in the background.
Absolutely. I liked that Neil tried to take charge at the end, and I just kind of thought it was cute where he was like, it's okay, Nancy. I can handle your dad from here. You go take care of the kids. Okay, Neil. And off she goes, and he's like, all right, fucker, come here. Like,
okay, first off, dude, all right, so that scene, I was just like, you don't fuck with John Saxon. Like, come on.
Except he totally did.
No, I know, but I was like, you're lucky that motherfucker's drunk, because I was like, he used to be a cop. I was like, they had training. I was like, yeah, he knows. No. I was like, but it's like, at the same time, I think he was just that drunk. He was like, I don't give a shit.
No,
anymore.
He didn't. And,
I'll take some shit from a doctor, whatever.
Like, well, he'd given up years before that. So I like that Neil stepped up. I really, some would argue that you don't really need to know how the sausage is made, but I like the backstory that we got from Freddy. Again, it just sort of beefs things up a little bit more. And for me, character development is one of my favorite things in a story. So getting a little more out of Freddy here, while it's still very early in the series, whereas if you listen to our Freddy's Dead episode, you hear me complain a lot about why the fuck are we adding all of these unnecessary details at the bottom of the ninth? This makes no sense.
Yeah.
Here, where you're not even right bang in the middle of the series yet, or you're about in the middle, getting a little bit of extra built onto this character that a lot of people who watch these films were starting to kind of glom onto. Like, Freddy was becoming a favorite.
Oh, and that was something else I wanted to mention, too, is that how happy I was with Freddy's voice. Because you and me have always had a problem.
I still had issues with it.
Well, no, but I mean, but they try to keep it as consistent as possible.
It was better.
Better. It was better. But that's the thing, is I was very happy with it, where it's like, it didn't feel like where he was doing the deep guttural Batman voice.
It was,
and then,
yeah.
Like, he didn't, like,
it was better.
Yeah.
There was definitely a few scenes where they didn't modulate his voice, and it still sounded like Robert Englund. I hate it so fucking much. In those first six movies, the shit they did with his voice is trash.
Yeah. I think my all-time favorite Freddy, and this might be a little controversial, but my all-time favorite Freddy is Freddy vs. Jason. Like, the look, the sound, the just, I mean, even the one-liners and stuff like that, it's like, yeah, some of them are completely cheesy dad jokes, but at the same time, there is a level of that, it was like the 2000s, like horror, like movie, like style, like going in.
Oh, it is very firmly a 2003 movie.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, but it works. And the fucking soundtrack, come on, with the bangers.
We did Freddy vs. Jason already. Go back and listen to that episode, because I think we went in pretty hard on the soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh my God. But that was the thing, is like, but that Freddy, I love the, just the sound that it's just. Everything about it, I think, it works really well. But this one,
it's better. It's still not great, but it's improved.
That's always my go-to. But with this one, I like that they built on the Freddy character, making him stronger and like showing that he's got all the kids' souls. And they does the iconic thing where he rips his shirt and shows.
The makeup was really well done. Cool. Kevin Yeager really got a handle on it. I liked the face makeup a lot more than I did in the prior two, because the first one was, the makeup artist was like, oh, I was screwing around with pepperoni pizza, and that's how I got the idea. I'm like, that's dumb. And then Kevin Yeager for part two was saying how he wanted him to look more like a male witch with the high cheekbones and the hooked nose, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
But I liked, this isn't necessarily my favorite of the Freddy makeups, but it's pretty high up there. Like, that was really well done. I just think overall it's one of the more coherent stories in this entire series. I think it's one of the better put together scripts, the better thought out scripts. And I think it's because they had more time between part two and part three than they ever had between any other two films in this franchise.
And I like that they were like, oh, no, we got to bring it back. And that's where it's...
Well, Sarah Risher, who was one of the producers, famously said she reached out to Wes to try to get him back. And he did send a draft in, but it was too ambitious and it was too vulgar and they didn't want to do it. Fine. Yeah. But he still got credit because there were still several chunks of his ideas that were used and his characters because Nancy came back.
But still, DreamWorks is still one of the, I think for most Fred heads, as you know, it was said in Dead Meat, it's like that was the thing. It's like it is probably the go to for most Freddy fans. Like it's
absolutely. Just, I have not. This is the only one in the series. And at least that original 7-movie run where I have not heard any Nightmare on Elm Street fans. I mean, there's probably some outliers, but I think in general, just in terms, there's not really anything negative said about this particular movie. Even the original, I'm one of those that's just sort of like, it's not that good. Like, yeah, there's some charm to it and there's some bits that are kind of fun, but overall, it's not a great movie. That was our very first episode from a few years ago, so if you're curious about my thoughts on that, go on back and listen to that. But this is the one I think most consistently across the board fans will agree on as being one of the best in the series. I think this is the one that most fans agree on as being the most well done in terms of script and tone, and it's the most consistent from beginning to end. So high praise for Dream Warriors for sure.
And this is I think this was one of the first Nightmare movies that I actually watched when I was a kid, like my dad let me watch. And then I went back and watched Nightmare 1 like a few months after that. But I think I mentioned this on the first podcast, but it's like I had this dream and I could have swore it was real. But I remember this whole scene where Freddy is in a wheelchair, he's burned, and there's this whole thing with this creepy laugh or something like that, but it's like, I couldn't
remember. You know what I think, and I have to go back and watch, there's an episode of Freddy's Nightmares where they give Freddy's backstory.
Maybe that was
I need to find it. I'm wondering if maybe it wasn't exactly that, but I'm wondering if maybe there was something similar to that in that episode of Freddy's Nightmares you saw.
I might have seen that, I remember, like, it could have been my own little dream that I was just like, I just vividly remember this scene where you could see Freddy and then the orderlies or like doctors are talking about him being a killer, and then they turn the camera back to and it's just an empty chair. You're like, oh my god, where'd he go? And it's just like, I just remember that being a solid scene, and I was just, it was one of my favorite scenes.
And
I'm like,
it's not real. It's in none of the movies.
What the fuck?
Well, I remember the first time we ran through the whole series, you were like, wait a second, I could have sworn this thing was real.
Yeah, I was like, I don't, like, I was having this moment, I'm like, was my childhood a lie? Like, what else am I, like, imagining? Was Jaws actually a shark?
I mean, you
was
thought...
Was it a dinosaur? Like, what was...
You thought The Phantom was a good movie.
I did think The Phantom was a good movie. Like,
so,
God,
there's that. All right, let's wrap this present up. So yeah, 4.5 out of me, 5 out of you.
Yeah.
So overall, Dream Warriors, buy it. Definitely go watch it. 2 thumbs way up from the Creepin' Crew.
If you don't own it already, what the fuck is wrong with your life?
I mean, it's streaming on HBO Max too, and a lot of people are in Amazon Prime and all kinds of shit. I think it's on Shudder. But anywho, so that's gonna wrap it up for this week. Next week, we're going to continue on our nightmare journey to Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Mm-hmm. And then then we'll build up to my birthday weekend. My birthday is on the 21st, which is a Friday.
Yeah.
So it's either going to be... I think we should do it on the 26th. Will be Jaws of Revenge.
So we'll do that one the Tuesday after.
Yeah, it'll be the Tuesday after my birthday. So I'll actually have a good day, and then I'll have a shit day.
Right. So we'll release that for your mom's birthday.
Yeah.
All right. So until next week, when we go back and have bad dreams, I've been Meg.
I have been Lynch. Oh, wait. Whoa. God, you got to knock the dust off.
What?
We got Instagrams. We got Facebook.
Oh.
We got everywhere that you can get in touch with us. And again, we loved hearing from you guys. So, yeah, find us on Instagram. We also have our – I still kept our Redbubble page up. So
creepingitreal.redbubble.com for the merch. It's at creepingitreal for both Facebook and Instagram. Email if you want to chat with Lunchbox here. It's creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com. And hopefully next week I'll be back in the groove, and I will not forget that shit.
Yeah, and again, if you always like as a quick link, we actually have in our bio on Instagram. Bio. Yeah, you just it'll take you right to the Redbubble page. And again, sport some merch. I try to make all these like pretty sweet designs that aren't like literally plastering our label all over the stuff. I actually, you know, want to make stuff that I like to wear.
He put some work in. He just wants to be appreciated.
I am an artist, damn it. Support artist.
All right. So until next week.
Now we can finish.
I'm out.
I'm the Good Buddy Lunchbox.
And sweet dreams, everybody.